416-870-0590, *590 on the cell, and long distance is 1-888-666-0590. Taking your calls at the top of the hour. Might do some live listen-ins on some other games. The Tigers are trailing the Kansas City Royals 4-2 as they play in the bottom of the sixth inning, two out and nobody on. A Tiger win puts the Royals 3.5 games out of first place in the Central with 1 week to play. The Boston Red Sox leading the Baltimore Orioles 3-2 as they play in the top of the ninth inning. And it's Houston over Seattle 4-3 in the top of the seventh. If those games get supremely interesting, big stuff happening, we will take you there live. John Danks, by the way, had the no-hitter through six innings for the Chicago White Sox, but didn't go any farther than that. White Sox, though, still lead Tampa Bay 10-3 in the bottom of the eighth inning, and Danks is long gone. 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Ryan is in Milton. Ryan, you're going to lead things off on Blue Jays Talk today.
Hey, how's it going, Mike? I just got a question for you here. I'm wondering what they need to do to get themselves over that that hump, that like where they're at right now. Do you think it's a leadership thing? They don't have enough winners in the room or something, or it just doesn't seem like there's a winning atmosphere.
Well, it did last week, though, right? Yeah. I mean, it did till they went on this road trip. That's why none of those things are really, none of that matters. None of that stuff matters. What they need is people to stay healthy and people to produce. That's exactly what they need. They have the requisite 25-man roster to be able to compete and do quite well. I mean, you know, they went into August in a playoff spot and relatively firm in it before it all fell apart.
I'm not bashing the Jays.
Well, no, and I understand that, but I'm saying, like, when things go off the rails the way they did for the Blue Jays this year, the natural inclination, I think, is to look for answers that aren't apparent, right? Is it leadership? Is it the clubhouse? Is it something like that? Stuff that we can't possibly identify, so no one who says this is what's wrong can ever be proven wrong, because there's no way to prove whether that's right or wrong. I prefer to look at the tangible things. They stopped hitting, basically, for 2 months. And when that happens, you're not going to win too many ball games. Their defense was exposed, right? With the lack of Brett Laurie. So those are the things that knocked him out.
Well, what about Baltimore? You know, you have Chris Davis out. You have all these guys getting out, but they're still somehow pulling off wins. And I don't know if it's just they're just used to the you know, winning, and they've been to the show last year, to the playoffs.
They weren't in the playoffs last year.
Or, sorry.
Yeah. They were in the playoffs 2 years ago, and that was the first time in, like, 15 years or more that they'd been to the playoffs. Baltimore lost Manny Machado and lost Matt Wieters for long periods of time. It's true. Chris Davis is lost now, but A, Chris Davis is having a terrible year anyway, and two, Chris Davis didn't get suspended until the Orioles had an 11-game lead with 3 weeks left. So that's really irrelevant.
That helps.
Right. But, you know, they've if you look at it, they've had Adam Jones play pretty much every game all year, Nelson Cruz play pretty much every game all year, and Nick Markakis play pretty much every game all year. I think between them they've missed two games, or had before the Orioles clinch, and they might have had some days off sooner than that. That's big stuff. Who've the Blue Jays had that's played pretty much every game this year?
Bautista's been pretty close,
I think. That's it. He missed a week, didn't have to go on the DL when he hurt his hamstring back in late June, but that's it. Nobody else. Everyone else has been on the disabled list at some point in time this season, with the exception of Deonna Navarro, who played hurt for a month with the quad thing. And I hate to keep pointing to injuries, but 6 weeks without your 4, 5, 6 hitters all together out of the lineup at the same time is pretty significant for a team that's going to miss the playoffs by 7 or 8 games.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I respect your opinion, of course. So,
thank you, sir.
If you could make a change, what would you do?
What would I do? I would try to go out and find, well, hopefully, if they don't sign Melky Cabrera, I would try to go out and get a legitimate big-time everyday corner outfielder. I would try to find a better offensive second baseman, but one who also has to be able to play defense. I might consider moving Jose Reyes, though I think that there's a lot more in there, and I think that, his hamstring issues really, really affected his defense this year. But then again, who's to say that coming back for another year on turf isn't going to continue to give him the hamstring problems that are going to hurt his defense? Because that's just bad defense at shortstop, and it shows up how much it hurts the team. So those are the things I would address. And try to fix up the bullpen a little bit. I don't think it's you have to go nuts on the bullpen, but I do think that there's a little work to be done there. We shall see what transpires in the offseason. Jose Reyes got another three hits today. And Jose Reyes, since the first week of May, is hitting over 300 with an on-base that's closing in on 350. And it's really interesting because you look at him and you say, does the bat outweigh the glove? And you look at Ryan Goins and you say, does the glove outweigh the bat? We'll take another one of your calls in a second, but first we're going to go to Fox Sportsnet Kansas City because Miguel Cabrera is at the plate with the tying run on. He is the tying run. There's a man on second, two out in the top of the seventh inning in Kansas City. Royals lead the Tigers 4-2. Miguel Cabrera at the plate facing Kelvin Herrera. Let's take you live to Kansas City.
Guthrie's fastball and Herrera's. He likes it out over the plate like most hitters, but he can do more damage than most hitters with balls out over the plate. That's about as bad a swing as you're going to see from Miguel Cabrera. It just highlights how nasty Herrera can be. Packed house, and they've had a lot more to cheer about today. Oh, and two.
And just an observation, I don't think many hitters would have caught up with that pitch even to foul it off. In other words, the inning's over.
He understands himself and his hands. Quick bat speed, short to the ball, generates power. I was thinking the same thing, Denny, after that foul ball. He is rarely ever fooled or late on anybody's fastball. One ball, two strikes. Now Sal going to go out and have a chat.
I always like to say, when in doubt, talk it out. Especially in game on the line like this, the magnitude of this game, what a difference leaving to Cleveland 1.5 back or 3.5. What do you throw him, Denny?
What's your best pitch?
Fastball. Throw it with conviction.
Mm-hmm. And then how did he get to that pitch?
Quickly.
Or with a changeup.
It's located properly, that changeup, that's a good pitch. And it was. It wasn't down out over the plate. That was way inside. Now that's going to make that fastball even harder to hit after trying to track that one.
And the location of that off-speed pitch, there's no way in the world he's going to put it in fair territory.
We're listening live, Kansas City and Detroit, as Miguel Cabrera fouls off pitch after pitch from Kelvin Herrera. He is the tying run. Detroit trails the Royals 4-2 with two out in the seventh.
When it comes to holding that lumber.
Yeah. was interesting, wasn't it? Cabrera at the plate, and Herrera made him wait. He changed the tempo, and he made him wait and wait, and Cabrera did not step out. So I think that's pretty relaxed hitter at the plate.
Yeah, you know, he's animated. He makes bases. He's very relaxed. He's very comfortable.
Mm-hmm. And he gets a ground ball to Escobar. Herrera with an inning and two-thirds scoreless.
So Miguel Cabrera grounds out to short. Big spot right there. And the Kansas City Royals will take their 4-2 lead to the seventh inning stretch in KC. They need a win to close to within a game and a half of first place in the AL Central. The Royals hold the second wild card in the American League by a half game over the Seattle Mariners, who currently trail Houston 4-3 in the bottom of the seventh. It has been an incredible turtle race for those last two playoff spots in the American League. And not just the Blue Jays, who have stubbed their toes here in September, but everybody, the Indians, the Yankees, the Mariners, the Royals, the A's, any of them could have put away playoff spots with a good September. Blue Jays lose it 5-2. And how about this? The Blue Jays are now 5-29 in their last 34 games at Yankee Stadium. That's amazing. Susan is in Woodbridge. Susan, well, listening to our flagship Sportsnet 590 The Fan, welcome to Blue Jays Talk.
Thank you. I would just like some clarification on the impact of the role of the manager, because in your segment on Blue Jays Central, you said that, you know, Gibbons, or managers, I guess, in general, really have like a non-issue, a non-role, whether they are able to motivate or however they can to, you know, light a fire. And then a few, like obviously halfway through the game when Buck Martinez is discussing, you know, he was waxing poetic about, you know, Girardi, I'm just wondering, what is the discrepancy, or what is the difference, basically, between, like, a Girardi and a Gibbons, besides their record?
Well, I think the difference is that John Gibbons would never let Brendan Ryan hit in a big situation in the bottom of the ninth when you're trailing and representing the tying run. So that tells me a lot about Joe Girardi. For me, that's the only thing a manager can do. A manager puts his players, sets his lineup, works his bullpen, tries to get the best player for the best situation in as many circumstances as possible.
All in all, it's a chess game, basically.
Yeah, I think so.
It's very much a chess game.
But that's all managers can do. And you know what? Very often, the wrong move can work out because you're dealing with human beings. And far more often than not, the right move doesn't work because, again, you're dealing with human beings. And what I was talking about on the Blue Jays Central piece was how, you know, there's no magic. There really isn't. And you're right. A lot of people wax poetic about managers and what they do and how they do it and how that has an effect on a team. But then you look and, you know, John Farrell was a genius last year when his Boston Red Sox won the World Series. And this year they're finishing in last place. Now, is it because he's no longer a genius, or is it because managers really don't have that much of an effect? People talk about Buck Showalter as this brilliant, brilliant man who every team would love to have. And you know, it's Buck Showalter has brought the Baltimore Orioles to the AL East division title. Well, Buck Showalter has been managing in the major leagues for 16 years, and this is the third time his team has won a division. And when you look at where Buck Showalter's teams have finished over the course of his career, far more often than any other place in the standings, they finished third.
Well, yes. And in terms, obviously, you know, we're looking at another maybe better than mediocre season. I mean, we've been at most games at the Rogers Center. They've been very entertaining. I you know, I'm disappointed in the ending, but the journey was fun.
Yes.
And I have to say, though, is there one, I think the one thing that I'm seeing more of is that the manager must have continuity. So even though we're in this holding pattern, is it fair to give Gibbons another 1-2 years to see? Is that the case?
Oh, I think so, because I think he's a very good manager. And And I echo your sentiment that stability is really important with a manager, with a general manager. When you look at how long Joe Torre ran the show in New York, and granted they were in the playoffs pretty much every year he was there. You look at San Francisco sticking with Bruce Bochy. You go back farther, something like a Tommy Lasorda with the Dodgers, where his team could finish in sixth place one year, win the World Series the next year, and finish in sixth place a year after that. I think stability is really important for a manager and for a GM, if assuming they're doing a good job.
Exactly. But I think they're the easy target for the fans.
Oh, there's zero question about that.
You know, and I mean, we're no different. You put out thousands of dollars for tickets, which is a lot of money for most people.
Yep.
And I mean, it's not like you're only going there to see a world champion. Yes, it'd be lovely to see any type of postseason. But I think we all have come so used to this, you know, like it's, you have to appreciate the journey and, you know, forget about the end result. But at the end of it, we saw a 19-inning game, which was a fabulous experience. I mean, these were, to me, the highlights that we experienced. And, you know, I think there was a general collapse, and we don't know, we will probably never know what caused this collapse.
Well, what caused it is lack of performance and a bunch of injuries, and I think more than anything else, those two things, and there are other intangible things that people will come up with, but the truth of the matter is those two things, more than anything else, have caused the Blue Jays to play 13 games under 500 since their high water mark of 38 and 24. The journey is the thing, but I think that after 21 years of journeys, Blue Jays fans would appreciate some payoff. George in Barrie, listening on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. You're up next on Blue Jays Talk. Go ahead.
Thanks a lot. Well, as a fan who was at spring training and followed the Jays throughout most of the season, I've talked to so many fans, and we love Kawasaki, and yet I hear on your show, and you're such a great baseball mind, so I don't even have that ability to comment in depth. I'd like your perspective on, what is the risk if you continue to say that we need a second baseman? If Kawasaki was just offered a contract, I think he makes about $650 a year now. If you pay him $1 million, considering you have to pay a guy like Cabrera like $8 million, what is the risk in having the fans super excited about this guy? There isn't a guy they love more next to Navarro, I suppose. And yet he's lacking talent, but he represents the boy in everybody think that you can actually become a baseball player. But his numbers are awesome, and he can stretch a pitcher out to exhaust them. He's such a great, dedicated, performing player, and still a young guy. So my question is, why can he not become the second baseman for the Blue Jays?
A lot of those things you said aren't true. I'm very surprised to hear you think that Navarro is more popular. He wouldn't have been a name that I picked, but that's kind of interesting.
Well, that's him because he's got my build. Right.
So. Well, yeah, a lot of people do. But here's the truth about Munenori Kawasaki. First of all, he's not a young guy. He's 33 years old.
Okay.
But you're right that he doesn't make a lot of money. But you also said his numbers are awesome. And for me, that means you have an extraordinarily low bar for what awesome is. His numbers aren't anywhere close to awesome.
Is he not batting 270?
He's hitting about 270 with an on base of.
Was hitting 227 or something.
Right, but it's a very empty 270. He's come to the plate 257 times this year, and he's got 8 extra base hits, no home runs. His OPS plus, which rates him relative to all the other players in Major League Baseball, is 80, which means he's about 4/5 as good as the average major league hitter. Which is not good, which is not what you want every day. And, you know, we saw him, I think we've seen him get exposed a few times with the more playing time he gets. I mean, he was hitting 290 back in July, and 294 on July the 29th was his high watermark of the season. Since then, going into today, he's hit 230. He's still walking, and he's still giving you a good at bat, but he's getting out a lot. And when he doesn't get out, he's getting a single. or a walk. He's not. He's far from awesome. And I think that offensively you could do a lot better. There's something to be said for the fact that everybody loves him. But the truth of that matter also is that if you build a winning team, people will find lots of people to love.
Fair enough. I was going to say one more thing, though.
Sure.
When you think of, I used the word awesome in a wrong way. I'd say awesome for the money that you'd be paying to get that guy. Because if you look at the averages of players, you know,
he's
still in the middle, is he not?
Right. No, he's at the low end of salary for sure, and he's got a better than average on base percentage, but again, it's pretty empty. And you're right, he's not making a lot of money, but that's because he's not arbitration eligible yet. And if he was producing at a high, high level, then yeah, that's a huge bargain. But he's just okay, and you could do a lot better.
Well, I love your show. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, George. And I do think, too, that the more he plays, the less effective he is, which is not what you're looking for when you're looking for someone to play every day. Blue Jays lose 5-2 to the Yankees. Lazaro in Toronto? Lazaro?
Yeah, Lazaro Madera.
All right, Lazaro, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, my name is Lazaro Madera. I'm a retired baseball player from Cuba.
Yeah.
I've been in this country here in Toronto for a year and a half. So my question to you is, the Blue Jays, they have a good staff, but the coaching staff, they are not there yet to follow this team to the playoffs and to direct this team to our winners. All right? It's too much love for the players. Too much love for the players.
You think they're too easy on the players?
Yeah, too much easy on the players. I remember 1997, we were playing the national series in Cuba. All right? I was playing with Juan Castro, Lázaro Madera, Omar Linares. That was my team. Alfonso Quiola, that right now is the coach for the Cuban team now. And then Linares came to me and said to me, you know what? We're going to win this game because we play as a team, because we don't play as individual. All right? So the coaching staff, they're seeing that they play their favorite players. Like, I'm going to give you an example. Doesn't matter how good the player you are, if you are 3-0, do not give the guy green light to swing the bat. You have 3 more pitches to walk around. Do not. Doesn't matter who you are. Doesn't matter who you are, Derek Jeter. Doesn't matter who you are, Omar Linares. Doesn't matter who you are, Batista. Doesn't matter who you are, Encarnacion. Do not swing 3-0. Period.
Okay, but that's a philosophical thing that you know, Jose Bautista hit a 3-0 home run yesterday. And Carlos Delgado used to hit 3-0 home runs all the time.
I know, but once in a blue moon they hit a home run, once every 17 times a bat, it's going to hit you a home run and 3-0?
No, but I think that if you have a great hitter and you say to this great hitter, I trust your strike zone judgment and I'm going to let you swing 3-0 because if you get a pitch in a spot that you want that you can drive, go ahead and hit it. And, you know, Jose Bautista is hitting 400 when he swings 3-0, when he puts a ball in play. Now, I'll grant you that it's 32 times he's been 3-0, and he's hit the ball 5 times, and he's hit a single and a homer in those 5 times. So it's very rare that happens. But, I mean, that's a philosophical thing. That has nothing to do with guys being soft on
I know. Put it this way. How many times Bautista come this year with a bases loaded? And then nobody out. How many times he come with a bases loaded? Nobody out. 3-0, swing, double play, no run and score.
It's never happened. It's never happened.
It's been happening.
It hasn't happened once.
No, but what I say, it can be happening.
Sure, it can happen. But you know what? So can good things can happen too. And if you have a player, again, who's a great hitter, I'm willing to give that player, and not everybody, but Bautista and Encarnacion, sure, I'll let them swing 3-0. We're out of time, so I have to let you go, but I appreciate the call. I really do appreciate the perspective of someone who's played from a high level. But Cuban national team has all sorts of other things going on there that, you know, that change the level of everything. Blue Jays lose 5-2. Apologies to those of you to whom we could not get. We will Blue Jays talk it up all week long. The final homestand of the season. It is the Honda Postgame Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Back here at Baseball Control in Toronto. Mike Wilner here with you. The Blue Jays lose it by a score of 5-2 to the New York Yankees. The road season is done. They finish 37-44 and 1-6 on this final road trip. The Kansas City Royals lead the Detroit Tigers 5-2 in the bottom of the seventh. Cleveland's up on Minnesota 7-2 in the bottom of the eighth inning. It's Houston 4, Seattle 3. That one in the bottom of the seventh. And the Phillies and Oakland A's are tied 3-3 in the top of the third. Right now, the wild cards are held by Oakland and Kansas City, with Seattle just a half game back. Blue Jays open up their final homestand of the season tomorrow night. We're on the air at 7 o'clock. It'll be Jay Happ against James Paxton in a battle of lefties. You've been listening to Home Hardware, Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by Home Hardware. Homeowners helping homeowners with expert advice. This copyrighted broadcast is presented by authority of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership. It may not be reproduced or retransmitted in any form, and the accounts and descriptions of this game may not be disseminated without the express written consent of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership for the Sportsnet Radio Network. For Jerry Howarth, Joe Siddle, Tom Young, Derek Brandeo, and Joe Sicilia, I'm Mike Wilner. Bye-bye.